May I ask, when he came to you, did he come to you
like, in a dream, in a vision,
flying in through a window, and
was all that peyote you drank?
I'm not sure. They both happened at the same time, but it's hard to say whether or not the peyote caused the vision.
Yeah,
or
You gotta, you probably shouldn't drink peyote every night.
Well, it helps me get to sleep.
I'm in a real identity crisis here, Al.
Nothing penetrates within Dawson.
Who do you see in the mirror?
Hey.
Oh, grey, hot.
Hello and welcome to the Incomplete series, your incomplete guide to every television show you've never watched. My name's Morgan and this is the podcast where we watch the first episode of a television series and then the very last episode of that television series, and then we try and work out what happened in the middle. Joining me to do this is the biggest fan of Jan Michael Vincent that I know, Mr. Jeremy Wiseman. Jerome, how are you?
Always been a fan.
Long time
look,
fan.
One thing I want to say, I know I always sort of pick at the intro, but I think this is the first time where maybe it has rung true. Maybe there was one other show in Baywatch Nights that the first episode and last episode of a TV show you've never watched, because I don't think anyone would have watched Airwolf.
Not hard to find episodes of Airwolf. Yeah,
still alive.
No one that
I think it's had like a great second life in Russia, judging by the Googling.
Yeah,
a lot of Russian dubs.
I think they're into like sort of softcore military porn.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. If that's like a genre of TV show.
So inside Belisario's wheelhouse, which we will get into.
It's a big softcore military porn.
We will. But I better move ahead to the second biggest fan and the treasurer of the Jan Michael Vincent fan club, Scott. Scott, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. It's I tell you what, it's busy work this time of year.
I can imagine.
In the Jan Michael Vincent fan club.
Everyone struggles to say his name, don't they?
There's a lot happening.
You stumbled over it a little bit.
Well, I have. I keep saying Jan Michael Vincent.
It's Jan.
I know that, but I keep
Jan.
Thinking.
It seems short like it should Jan. Be. It should be Jan.
You would think so. If he was, is he European? He's of European descent.
I mean,
it's hard to tell. Really,
he's quite weathered. He's quite weathered in, I think, the first and the last episode, the two episodes that we saw.
Well, yeah. I mean, I did see a little bit of another episode that I wasn't meant to watch, but we'll move past that.
Okay, well,
it was a bit of an accident. Happy accident.
Yeah.
The listeners don't need to know the way that we absorb the shows.
No.
So do you think he's, what is he, like, what, Belgian or?
Half Dutch, probably.
Half Dutch, okay.
Yeah. Dutch-American?
Dutch-American. Like
one quarter Dutch. I think there's a big Dutch-American community.
Mm. How many Jan Michael Vincents do you think there are?
Maybe like, I reckon Jan Vincent is...
Jan Vincent.
Yeah. Like, why would you... I've got a bit of a thing. Like, I reckon you've got to have a bit of a complex about yourself to include your middle name in your name.
I think it's a part of his first name. Like his name is...
Jan Michael.
Like,
Jan.
Yeah, but are you sure? Because it's not hyphenated or anything like that.
It is hyphenated.
Is it? No, it's not.
No,
I'm
it's not.
Sure it's hyphenated.
I'm pretty sure it's not hyphenated.
I am sure it's hyphenated.
You're the treasurer.
I would know.
So... I mean,
this could spell the end of your long-running tenure as treasurer.
I will impeach you. I've had my eye on that treasurer for a long time.
I have never sacked anyone from the fan club.
Honestly, it'd be a welcome relief.
It's just too much pressure.
We're working too hard for too long.
But I'm a big enough man to admit when I'm wrong. It's Jan hyphen Michael.
Thank you.
Oh,
I will keep my terrible job.
Does that mean you're going to impeach Jez?
It might be terrible, but it is well paid.
That is true. It is very it's very lucrative.
As well paid as Jan Michael Vincent was in Airwolf.
Yes, $200,000 an episode.
$200,000 a year, believe it or not.
Or $200,000 per episode of...
Per meeting of the
per meeting, I get paid $200,000.
Which is bi-weekly.
That seems a little excessive for a mid-1980s
TV show. Yeah, the shareholders
are
not happy.
Why are they shareholders?
I don't know.
It was publicly listed?
Weird company structure. In Russia it was,
Oh, okay.
It did very well.
Yeah. I guess it keeps the whole fan club afloat. But how did we come across Airwolf?
Well, I feel like we're missing the elephant in the room here, which is that we're missing a fourth member of the podcast.
Yeah, we are too.
We just sort of brushed past that.
We did. I've just gone straight. I'm sorry. Jan Michael Vincent's
been taking
things
over. I've been trying to push the hurt way down.
Oh, okay. Right.
You know? It's healthier that way. You've got to bottle it up. Bottle it up. Tight as you can.
For all we know, Aaron might be dead.
We don't know.
I've never known someone to go to Sweden and come back. So
That's true.
I don't know anyone that's been to Sweden.
I know about six people that have gone to Sweden and come back. So I'm holding that hope. But
look, if the worst comes to worst, we'll send Jan Michael Vincent.
He could be the exception to
get
him out. Proves the rule.
Exactly. Yes. Airwolf will get him out for us.
Nothing bad happens in Sweden.
No. Exactly.
I'm sure he's having Except a lovely time. There was that one. We don't talk about that one time there.
No.
No, of course not.
It'll be okay. But yeah, Aaron will be taking an extended hiatus from the pod, unfortunately.
Sabbatical.
Yeah, exactly. He's still going to be...
He might turn up. He might turn up at some point. That could be exciting.
He will be connected in some way.
Mm. He's researching Swedish shows for us to do.
Mm. And while he's not physically here right now, he will always be here.
In Morgan's list segment?
Yes, in my heart.
Morgan is pointing to the list segment on our whiteboard of
exactly
segments of the show. We don't have a whiteboard.
No, I'm pointing to my heart.
Three segments.
Spent all the money on Scott's salary.
Yeah, it's true. I'm getting paid $200,000 for this as well, for
Jesus
each episode.
Christ, you're just bleeding us dry.
Yeah. How do you think you afforded that solid gold microphone?
I could pay you guys if I wanted to, but I don't.
And those tank tracks for legs.
They're constantly upgrading
a lot
himself.
Of money.
They're gold clearly. Tank tracks. That would not work out well. There would be too much
malleable.
Yeah.
But let's shift focus. I'm not even sure whether we even addressed we just started talking about Jan Michael Vincent. I'm not even sure whether we talked about Airwolf, because that's a show.
Yeah,
we did Airwolf.
I think that's the only sort of... I think that's what he's famous for.
Airwolf. Mm.
Mm. That and the Rick and Morty segment.
He was in a movie with Gary Busey.
Rick and Morty skit? I don't know what you would call it.
Should we indulge the listeners?
Yeah, let's indulge.
In a world where there's 8 Jan Michael Vincents.
We need 1 Jan Michael Vincent to quadrant C. We need 2 Jan Michael Vincents to quadrant E.
And 16 quadrants. There's only enough time for a Jan Michael Vincent to make it to a quadrant. He can't be at 2 quadrants at once. This January, it's time to Michael down your Vincents.
I think I like most about that is time to Michael down your Vincents.
Yeah. Michael down your Vincents.
I'm going to try and really work that into my general vernacular if I can.
Also, I feel very blessed to be to have been born in January.
Yeah.
It's serve you well in the future, I think.
So, for your 30th next year...
Hey. Listen,
can't reveal the big 3-0 coming up.
For all listeners, I'm 45.
I'm 11.
I can reveal on an exclusive that you're actually 30. And
I'm
almost 30. But I can also.
That said, if someone's listening to this in 6 months' time, I'll be 30.
Well, that's a good point. So I can reveal that Scott and I were planning to make it a Jan Michael Vincent themed 30th for you.
This January?
Yeah, we're all going to have January.
Sort of chiseled boyish features and like. The red sort of soft glow of an alcoholic and fluffy 80s action hero hair.
Precisely.
Yeah. Exactly. And we will all fly in separate helicopters.
We'll all be playing cellos.
Exactly.
Oh,
man.
All right. So should we...
Let's
spell out, like, so Airwolf is Donald P. Belisario's first show that he, flagshipped.
Yes. And for those who are not keeping a score at home, Donald P. Belisario, we've done... 2 of his shows before?
We've done Quantum Leap. We've done
Jag.
If we can't remember this, then the listeners aren't going to remember this.
We're in trouble.
Well, has he done any other TV shows of note? Didn't he do NCIS maybe?
NCIS. That makes sense.
But we've only done... the three that we've done.
So those are the two that we've done. And there are small similarities.
We didn't do Tales of the Gold Monkey?
We didn't. No, apparently not.
I feel like I probably remember if I've done.
No, we did Pretty Little Lies.
What about Tequila and Banana?
He was connected with Let's shift back to Airwolf. Shift back to Airwolf.
Essentially, Airwolf is, I guess, like the genesis of the rest of Donald P. Belisario's shows. In that, it is about his one true passion, which is about flying aircrafts,
or the military invent,
military and flying shit.
Yeah,
he loves shit that goes through the air.
Watching this, I sort of, and then watching Jag and the other shows that came after, this was like the show that he wanted to make the most.
Mm.
And then I think the world overdosed on Belisario a little bit and he had to tone it down for the subsequent shows. Because it was...
Introducing some other elements.
It was a wild ride.
I know we were sort of talking in that little sort of incomplete series message chain we have. And I tend to agree that this first episode is close to the best thing we've seen.
Yep.
It is that the pilot of this show is next level.
I was many boxes.
I was legitimately really invested.
If you want to just watch, it's a movie length pilot.
Yeah.
And if you could watch it as a self-contained movie, I think.
Yeah, you wouldn't need to watch anything else.
No, as we did.
You might want to.
Great. It was great.
It's genuinely pretty good.
It was genuinely pretty good.
Yeah, like...
production value, pretty good.
Acting, pretty solid.
Pretty solid.
Yeah, yeah. Not bad. Genuinely well cast as well. I really liked the main villain. We haven't actually done the episode summary yet, so we should talk about that in a second. Yep. David Hemmings, who is Cassius in... Gladiator. He's in a bunch of stuff, like a pretty well-known British actor.
He's got some chops.
Yeah, and he was pretty good.
I enjoyed watching him.
Yeah. But look, we should probably just dive into the episode one and then we can sort of flesh it out from there.
Let's do it.
If you're familiar with Donald P. Belisario's back catalogue, then you won't be surprised to hear that Airwolf starts with an attractive brunette explaining the capabilities of a state-of-the-art helicopter ready to break the sound barrier.
Airwolf is an aerodynamic lifting body with a twin turbine-driven rotor system, capable of propelling it to 300 knots.
It's the Airwolf, and there's only two people who know how to pilot it. There's Dr. Moffat, the designer who's stolen the chopper and is hell-bent on using it to achieve his ghastly goals, whilst giving a bit of help to Gaddafi in order to keep control of Libya. And the other is Stringfellow Hawk, also known as Jan Michael Vincent. With the help of a senile Ernest Borgnine, Stringfellow is enlisted to return Airwolf, but only on the proviso that the government will help him look for his brother Sinjin.
Hawk, he's been an MIA for 14 years. The odds your brother's alive are 10,000 to 1.
Well, if he is dead, at least bring his body back.
Naturally, he falls in love with a government employee named Gabrielle.
Connie is infuriating.
Only because he likes you.
He manages to destroy Moffat and keep Airwolf for himself, but loses Gabrielle in the process. And the episode ends with a tearful cello recital on a pier, whilst a bald eagle flies overhead.
Wow.
Like I said, I was so invested with this. After like 10 minutes, I'm like, I'm in. I was in.
Quick sidebar.
Yeah, sidebar.
How often do we open from the episode summary with a wow?
Actually, that's true.
Probably a lot.
But this is
a good wow.
Yeah. Usually it's a wow,
that was garbage. Whilst this wow is like, there's a lot going on. Yeah, and they managed to keep all the balls in the air at the same time.
There's a difference between like the Baywatch Nights wow and the like Beauty and the Beast wow. This was a quantum leap wow.
True.
Oh,
so,
really?
I think so. So first of all,
genuinely.
Wow.
First of all, obviously, there's a lot to unpack from this episode. Who calls their son Stringfellow?
Great question. The same kind of person that would name their son Sinjin.
There's something just... I want to sidebar...
Crazy person.
I want to sidebar it again and just
a sidebar from the sidebar.
I want to sidebar Jeremy's sidebar.
How many sidebar?
There's going to be multiple sidebars.
We're going to sidebar a lot soon.
Let's just focus on my sidebar for now.
Okay, all right.
I want to start adding in something where we look at what's most dated, especially when we hit some of these older shows.
Mm.
And I mean, there's a lot of things that are pretty dated in this show.
Yeah, that is a good segment we could add is dated moment of the episode or week.
What's most dated?
What's the most dated? Yeah.
What did you guys think was the most dated?
Oh, the misogyny.
It's always really the misogyny, isn't it?
I think it's
unavoidable in Eddie shows.
There was a point there where it was genuinely uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah,
I know exactly what you're talking about.
I think it is that moment of like where maybe in the mid '80s, a real like when someone's like really strongly hitting on a woman in a very ambiguous scenario, like. That's okay for some reason.
Yeah.
And now it's just not. It's like he comes off. This is a
Stringfellow.
Comes off as quite rapey.
Literally what I wrote. This scene is very rapey.
It's very rapey.
Explain it to the listeners.
Yeah, give some exposition.
So after Moffat steals Airwolf, flies off to Libya to side with Gaddafi. That's probably second in what's aged the worst.
I actually wrote what's dated. Gaddafi.
Yeah.
He's very dated.
Supporting Gaddafi.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, he's meant to be like a psychopathic terrorist, but still. Anyway, so they've got to enlist Stringfellow because he's the only other one that can fly it. So Archangel, who is the head of the organization, I guess. Yep. And he's sort of assistant slash another sort of operative, Gabriel, fly out to Stringfellow's cabin in the woods. Literally a cabin in the woods where he's just like fishing for trout and playing cello.
Yeah, playing the cello. Playing the cello on a pier with his dog. And he's literally serenading a bald eagle.
Absurd amount of priceless art on the wall. There's one little scene that turns on the fact that he's got like an original Van Gogh on the wall. Anyway, he comes off as a real asshole.
He really does.
This reproduction, it's really excellent. I saw the original in Paris at the Impressionist Museum.
No, you didn't. What's the firmest position on Moffat and the crew?
Gabrielle's sort of interested in the art and he keeps shutting her down. And then it's real ugly. They all sort of retire for the night and then she sneaks upstairs to supposedly talk to him about the art. And he just won't hear that. He's like, no. I don't know why you came up here.
Yeah.
I don't know why you were brought here.
Yeah. Came up for that Jan Michael
pins
dick.
It down on the bed.
Ugh.
And gets really...
real off in it. And she's genuinely upset.
It's like, too much.
It's very uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah, it's,
all you got to do is listen to like what she's saying. She's like, no, stop.
Stop, yeah.
This is clear cut.
But it's all right because he's got a damaged past.
I forgot.
It actually is one of those moments in the show where you're like, this is pretty intense and you're so engaged with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, this is so... like, it was so rapey and creepy. But back then, that's not the reason you were engaged with it. Like, oh my God, this guy's a psycho.
How romantic is this scene?
He's such a powerful man. That's not what I got out of it.
He's so passionate.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, they just bill him.
Brooding and damaged.
Yeah. They just bill him as that kind of character. He's like, like lives out in the woods by himself, like with his dog and like, you know.
You know why he lives out in the woods? Because he's on a sex offenders list.
Really should
not
be.
Allowed he near can't be in the general population. He's been extradited to the woods where he can't rape anyone other than the trout and the eagles. Well, if you look closely in the first episode, you can see one of those sort of electronic monitoring bracelets on his ankle.
Ankle bracelet.
Yeah.
Speaking of the woods and living out there with your dog, I just want to quickly side mention that
where is he?
We're Destination Podcasting. We're Destination Podcast. Right,
Sorry, can I add another? I add another point that's quite rapey that we'll get back to. Yeah, we are destination podcasting. We thought the best way to channel our inner Jan Michael Vincent was to go out into a cabin in the woods.
Exactly.
And play cello and try and rape each other.
Jeremy, please. I'm going to pivot off that.
This is the other thing.
Will you let me pivot off?
No, the other thing that's incredibly creepy is he's trained the dog to look up women's dresses.
Oh, okay. Did you miss that bit?
No, I did.
It did it twice. Okay.
What happened?
And she's like, why would you train him to do that? And he just kind of like chuckles at it.
What?
Yeah, it is very disturbing. Like, has he trained this dog to be interested in women? Okay, I was going to pivot and say, in our... in moving to another location in order to record the podcast. Also, if you don't know, like maybe this is the first episode that you've listened to. Mm-hmm. We usually record at my house.
Yeah.
Or what is currently my house.
Yes.
And now we are currently at Morgan's house. Mm. But we do now have a dog as well.
We do.
So we have gotten out to the woods and we have a dog.
Exactly.
As well.
And I'm wearing a flannelette shirt.
Now, Morgan, have you trained the dog to look up women's skirts?
I have not.
How do you even do that?
Well, that's the thing.
I don't know.
I would like to say.
Does he dress up as a woman and like?
I mean, I've got to really
then, like, give the dog rewards when it looks at his legs. Like, what?
It seems it's such. But what possible gain do you get out of that?
It's so weird. He gets this weird satisfaction.
You don't understand. He's just dark and brooding and misunderstood.
I have the problem because
everyone around him has died. All right, he's got trouble forming relationships.
Everyone he's ever loved dies.
Stringfellow is afraid that anyone he loves or might love will die. That's why when he was so cold to you yesterday, I knew he liked you.
So he's got to train his dog to sexually assault women.
He's the only
option.
He's definitely correct in that, like, the problem is him. Like,
oh yeah,
because he has this whole complex about like everybody that he gets close to dies. Except, you're the problem,
except for Ernest Borgnine.
Oh yeah,
so Ernest Borgnine is the only one that
technically
he's
dead now.
But he's quite a jaunty fellow. Like, it just bounces off him. He's got this like bulletproof.
Yeah, he's also incredibly misogynistic.
Stirling? Well, I don't really want to call him Stirling. Stringfellow?
Stringfellow.
Stirling. Archer. Stringfellow Hawk. Is he the most misogynistic character we've assessed?
I don't know. I think we get.
He's well up there.
We get more
the
of
Hoff,
an,
the Hoff
we
came get, close.
We get more of an explanation about him. Like, he has more backstory than other misogynistic
characters. He also kind of redeems himself through the course of the episode. But that first scene was really bad. Anyway, we should move on to other sort of parts of the episode. Like, so we haven't talked about the helicopter.
Yeah, so Airwolf is the helicopter, which is basically a character. I guess it's sort of like the kit of this show.
Yeah,
so
it doesn't talk. No, it's not sentient.
But it takes three people to pilot it?
Four. There's like one guy
Is it three?
No, it's four.
Safety guy?
There was one guy whose role was just countermeasures. When they're explaining how
just
it works?
Just countermeasures?
Yeah, countermeasures. Countermeasures,
what
that's
does that
it.
Mean?
So you don't need that. Well,
so when someone shoots at you, you can deploy a flare or something.
Yeah. Or you.
But that's it. Like, that's guy would just sit there reading a magazine half the time.
You just hit flare.
Oh, time for a flare? More of a than you and your fucking $200,000 a week for the
you
bank.
Can't
I
just
earned
be
that. I've earned that
well,
money.
And the countermeasures guy would say the same thing. He's got one button. I hit the flare when there's a missile coming.
He's on 200K.
But so I read a little bit about it. The helicopter that they've used is just like one of those. What's the president's helicopter? Something one.
The Air Force one is the plane.
Yeah.
Is there a helicopter as well?
Is it Airwolf one?
It is.
Airwolf one. That makes sense.
It's like a consumer aircraft.
Right.
Yeah. They paint it up to look
military,
fancy, but it's a very sort of run-of-the-mill aircraft, apparently. But the way that they make it look like it's flying really fast is just have it fly and then speed up the footage.
And you can see like the wind blowing the trees faster.
Yeah. And it's not very convincing. Shakes around when it's moving. It just looks so stupid. But apart from that, the rest of it seemed okay. Like there was obviously Belisario's budgets must just be all blown on.
He must in the
shooting
first episode.
Aerials.
Yeah, aerials. And he they used Airwolf for the whole show. So they must have spent a lot of money like custom making an aircraft for a TV show. It's absurd. But like, you just wouldn't get that off the ground
It's crazy. And especially when you're thinking, like, he's, like, I mean, obviously he's worked on shows before this. Like, I think it was saying he's working on Magnum PI and stuff. Yeah. But, like, to spearhead this show, he's cutting his teeth on this.
The outlay before you even make an episode would be millions. Tens of millions. It's just insane how much they got to spend on all these, like, action shots of a helicopter and building a helicopter. And anyway.
And can I just quickly say also, like,
Airwolf's pretty sick.
It is sick, but like Belisario has a serious, serious hard on
for the
military and for Air Force, and just like describing it in certain ways.
Basically, Airwolf is an aerodynamic lifting body with a twin turbine-driven rotor system capable of propelling it to 300 knots. The latter offers him 14 firepower options ranging from 30mm cannons to nuclear-tipped Shrike missiles.
I remember that, and I just remember my eyes glazing over. It was so unnecessarily long.
So unnecessary.
Saying the same thing to Scott before. Like, I don't know what... Like, am I meant to be impressed by these things? I don't know what these words mean.
It's a fleshed out version of my favorite like description of any sort of like powers or like good technology still is Smallville's. He went to a coma with an
electrolyte imbalance,
so he has the power to control electricity.
But just all these things.
There might be a handful of ex Air Force Americans who would get it, right? That woman starts talking about that stuff, hand goes straight down the pants.
Well, like, just I don't think there's... Like there's definitely a reason why he's getting, like... there's, like, an attractive young brunette who's describing all that
Belisario
stuff.
Belisario is jerking off on set to that.
Oh, no. Like, this is what I was thinking. Like, I almost did this as my reboot, but I didn't, where it was, like, you know...
ASMR?
Reading
out military... Sort of specifications.
And this is like a very specific thing, but that like specific genre of porn where it's like jerk off instructions.
Yeah.
That is what this is for Donald P. Belisario.
Where some woman
just stares down the
camera and reads out military specs to him,
and he just finishes himself off.
Immediately, almost. Yeah.
Mm. So just sitting there, director's chair, no pants, just one of those like kind of fishing vests.
Director's vest. And a cap that says Belisario.
Just so everyone knows who he is. It's too much. Like, it's way too much. It's so unnecessary. Nobody cares but him. Nobody cares.
Can I just want to point out, I really don't think we've really fleshed out this episode at all.
There's so much going on.
There's so much to talk about.
God. Can we talk about the fact that he doesn't wear underwear?
I also
yeah, that was a weird thing to add in.
What was that? And what? And why does he wear underwear?
Such a throwaway line.
Yeah.
Such a throwaway line.
Even the underwear's used. I don't wear underwear.
Why do they have to give him used clothes
as well? Exactly. It seems so unnecessary.
Is this supposed to make...
It's not that hard to find new clothes.
So this is when he's about to fly to Libya to track down Moffat, right?
Yeah.
And they're giving him like a uniform so he blends in.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it had to be used. It's like even the underwear's
used. I don't wear underwear. Why mention it? What is that supposed to mean to us? I don't understand. Is it code for something?
He's a man of the woods. He shits in the woods, Scott. That's what it means. Wipes his ass on trout.
I just want to go back to dial back again further back. When we first meet Borgnine, and he's like the stunt director at some TV set. Did anyone catch the self-reference?
Belisario project?
Yeah. That was...
That's pretty bold.
For your first ever project.
You're ham-fisted as well.
Oh, man.
Stringfellow goes and does some stunt work for him as well, briefly.
Mm.
Whereas like this sort of big macho stuntman who's like, yeah, I can fly a helicopter. What of it? And so Stringfellow's like, yeah, all right, I'll sit in the co-pilot seat and let you do the thing. And then he like takes off and like starts flipping and almost crashes into a building. And then all the people on the ground are like, what's that move again?
It doesn't tell us anything about Stringfellow.
No, it does give
it doesn't tell us anything about Ernest Borgnine's character.
Well, the thing is, it just means, oh no, this is what he does as a side job. It's irrelevant. There's no point.
It's like they shot it as like a proof of concept or something for the show, and they're like, well, I guess we've got to use it because we spent so much money doing this crazy.
I think the other thing as well is they maybe wanted more scenes that sort of prove that Stringfellow was a really good pilot, because before that he was just like some sort of Renaissance man living in the wood collecting art.
Oh man, clicking art, playing cello. You know, like seriously, that scene where he's playing the cello, I started straight away thinking he gets up at dawn, does Tai Chi on that deck. Just out there.
Breaks out the Stradivarius.
Oh yeah.
But not too far out on the deck because the ankle bracelet will go off.
Of course, it's got to be within 100 feet of the shack.
Can almost get to the end.
He always gets to the end.
There's a reason he's sitting back so far and Borgnine's just flying in food for him. I want to talk about when they're going to get Airwolf from that from the Libyan base.
Yeah.
They just rock up in just like the weirdest outfits. Like Borgnine's wearing his like Chicago Indians jacket Cleveland Indians jacket. He's got a cap on. Jan Michael Vincent's is in a tank top and pants, and he's got an Uzi with one clip.
Mm. Yeah,
and they just jump over the back wall.
Tell me, do they get away with Airwolf?
They get away with it.
Yeah, well, what's your problem?
He gets results.
It's a good point. I've always thought when you see people get into the SWAT gear, it just seems unnecessary. Yeah. He's cruising with
he's cruising with
an Uzi in one clip and a tank top. And underpants, mind you. No underpants. pants.
Nobody's checking that. He's fighting Libyans. They're a rabble.
Evidently. Well, tell that to David Hemmings. He started with them.
They don't reason with people who wear underpants.
So, when Moffat lands, the only sort of interaction that you see is him talking to presumably some sort of general, like his general. And every single time the general has a scene, he's got like, we've got a scene for that in the desert. Did you guys notice that?
Yeah, he did actually.
My point, Doctor, is that in the desert we have a saying. The lion can be killed by the jackal. If the jackal knows where to bite.
It's like three or four different sayings they've got for that in the desert. Or like something, we don't like women like that in the desert. They don't survive in the desert.
They'll shrivel up.
It was great.
He's
just in case he didn't realize that he was Arabic.
Yeah, we get it. You're from the desert.
He's an allegorical.
I understand. It's an arid country you're in. I understand.
The guy's an allegorical goldmine.
Yeah, he is.
Okay. Well, look, we really put a lot of work into episode one, and I think we've really done it justice. So, I think we move to the finale now, and we look at that.
The final episode of Airwolf opens with a poor man's Tom Selleck in a black leather jumpsuit swanning into a drug deal in a converted Vietnam War helicopter. He exchanges a briefcase for some women and flies off into the LA night. Back at the hangar, Stringfellow's nephew/son, Half Pint, tells him his auntie is missing. Stringfellow follows some half-baked leads all the way to an incredibly well-lit nightclub, where he learns that the jumpsuited man, Nick Kincaid, is most likely behind the disappearance.
Kincaid doesn't take any trouble from any of his girls, and your friend gave him a lot of trouble. If she hasn't been home in a week, I don't think she's coming home.
String infiltrates Nick's crew by pretending to be a friend of a friend and with the help of some sophisticated 80s voice-changing technology. After earning Kincaid's trust, String is cut in on a big drug deal, with the plan to use Airwolf as the smuggling vehicle. Kincaid and his honchos become suspicious of String before the big deal and arrive with a kidnapped half-pint with a view to steal Airwolf.
You let him go. I'll do whatever you want.
You're gonna do that anyway!
String and the crew have other ideas though, and a Barade Archangel turns up to help turn the fight. Before being hunted down and obliterated by Airwolf, Kincaid reveals that he killed Half-Pint's mother.
So I just took on this beautiful bird out here. We flew about 50 miles out to sea.
And Airwolf ends with Stringfellow executing a paperless adoption of Half-Pint. No questions asked.
I just want to dive straight in here and just discuss, why did they have a Dire Straits cover?
Was it a cover?
It was a cover.
Yeah.
And the song, like...
But it was like... It was weird in
Money for Nothing?
Yeah. But it was like a cover that was not trying to be a cover. It was trying to be as close to the original as possible without having to pay royalties.
Is it because it costs less?
Yeah, absolutely. And it played a lot. Because when it started playing in the background of the episode, I'm like, ooh.
There we go.
A bit of Dire Straits. And then it was like...
The opening of that episode is like... Half of that song, like a music video, with a cat just running around in the streets of LA.
My God!
The finale for me was not strong. I was not really thrilled.
What about Kincaid?
Has there ever been a TV show with a character called Kincaid and Kincaid has been a good guy? Because that is, it's like if your last name's Kincaid, you allocated to be.
If you turn up with a Huey helicopter in the first scene. With a bevy of women in a black leather jumpsuit.
And you gift them to somebody.
There is a lot of problems.
You're a bad guy.
Okay. No, I think the Kincaid's a stronger case than the things you've just listed.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah. Tell me I'm wrong, Scott. Tell me I'm wrong.
You're not wrong. I mean, like, they didn't sort of leave anything to, you know, the imagination.
No, that's true.
He offers poor Stringfellow drugs. You see that?
Yeah, which Stringfellow would
be... A briefcase full of cocaine, and he shoves his knife into it.
Jan Michael Vincent
says it doesn't snow in Hollywood.
I gotta.
If I'm ever doing cocaine in LA, I'm saying that. It's on my bucket list. Is just go to LA.
Do some coke in LA.
Do some coke in the limo.
This doesn't snow in LA.
Who says it doesn't snow in LA?
But it's got to be cut out of.
We're going skiing.
But the proviso is that it has to be cut out of the middle of like a fresh 1 kilo bag of coke.
Yeah, it spills everywhere. Yeah. That's
why is this a thing? Why is this a trope in films? Yeah. Like they cut it right in the middle. And then they just like close the brick. There'll be cocaine everywhere.
Yeah.
That is not efficient.
Expensive.
There's probably a place to open that
packet. I think it's also a show of their blatant disregard for how much cocaine they're spilling everywhere. It just shows how wealthy they are.
They're like...
Because
it's in scenes where people are like buying cocaine.
when we're just dusting off our hands. Hundreds of dollars here.
I'd be licking my finger and dabbing at it and rubbing on my gums.
Reapplying every 15 minutes.
Okay, what are you on about? This is good stuff, man.
Stop wasting it.
Anyway.
Stringfellow
has this sort of...
Jane Michael Vincent was
all in on the moral
cocaine.
Fortitude to deny it.
Yeah.
Not well.
Okay, so you're saying Jan Michael Vincent in on the cocaine.
Yeah,
Stringfellow not so much.
Stringfellow definitely not, but Jan Michael Vincent 100%.
Let's see if he ticks the boxes. He was famous in the 80s.
He was
on coke.
Getting paid $200,000 per episode.
Yep. When the cost of living was...
Seriously, that could have been real coke that they were actually just getting
out. It could have been.
Oh no, I got a brick in my trailer. We'll just use that. Don't worry about wrapping up some, powdered sugar or something like that.
Don't waste your flour on that.
No, that's all right. The stuff just grows on trees.
Yeah, little known fact, it's actually cheaper to buy cocaine than flour in the 80s.
Oh, there you go.
That's why everyone was just jacked all the time.
Yep.
Well, this is why creativity in the 80s. We had shows like MacGyver and Airwolf because everyone was on cocaine.
But not
like now where they're all on opioids.
You can't just be lifting theories from other podcasts, Morgan.
That's exactly what I did.
Yeah.
It's great. I've raised that before and it's a good theory.
It is a good theory.
I do want to say you can see why this show ended with only 55 episodes, despite the first episode being amazing. There's only so like that Kincaid. It seemed very unnecessary that he had a converted Huey helicopter.
Does every villain have a helicopter?
Yeah,
they do. And the other thing that we should mention is that our boy Stringfellow goes to a club to sort of snoop on Kincaid. He flies his fucking helicopter there.
Like yeah.
He comes out of the club and there's a scene with the valet. He's like,
don't tell me. Lamborghini, right? No. The white Rolls.
Oh, yeah, Ferrari?
It's like, no. So that's my helicopter.
And he turns around like he hasn't seen it, even though it's parked 30 meters away from him.
And I don't know if you saw this, but when he's flying off, there's like a fountain there, and he flies really close to it, spraying water all over fucking everyone.
The equivalent of like driving through a puddle.
The most obnoxious thing to do.
The guy's a cunt.
Where do lie low stream?
The guy is a cunt.
Have you guys been around when a helicopter lands?
Yeah, it's deafening.
It's so loud. It's unavoidable.
You can't just land in a car park.
I think it's the valet's like, oh,
flying helicopter to the club?
Yeah. No.
You can't do that.
You're gonna remember the guy that flew the helicopter, got out, and walked into a goddamn nightclub.
I think Belisario was...
And did he give him the keys? Like, is that why the valet's asking him? Like,
it's insane.
Belisario was crazy enough in the 80s to think that he was imagining a world in like 20 years' time, everyone's gonna be flying helicopters everywhere.
Do you reckon he did that in the 80s, Belisario? Flew his helicopter to a club?
Probably. Mm-hmm. Or it's definitely.
Jane Michael Vincent would have been. He would have been really leaning into the Stringfellow ways.
Well, that's all he did.
Well, you know, hey, he was successful in the 80s.
Well, did he do anything else? We haven't touched on this. Jan Michael Vincent.
Well, that's the thing.
The saga.
We were going to point out. So Jan Michael Vincent, unfortunately, this was amongst his like some of the last things he ever did. So he, as you could tell, you nailed it, Jez. He had a very serious alcohol and drug addiction. And was actually
the last episode, he had a real sort of alcoholic's glow.
Yeah. Mm. But he... Basically, his career pretty much just fell in a heap post this. I mean, he was in stuff, but not much. So he was actually pretty, you know, he was on the way up, and then he was apparently reported to be drunk on set a lot. It was huge issues with that. Now he's completely retired.
Oh, intravenous drug use. He's an opioid man.
Yeah. Oh, well, then I had it wrong. So I probably
oh, wait,
well,
no, cocaine. Cocaine. Yeah. He was arrested three times for cocaine possession.
Mm. But he was in a car accident shortly after.
Yeah, he was.
This. And then in another one about 10 years later, which they had to amputate half his leg.
Yeah. It's...
In the 90s, three severe car crashes.
Yeah.
Mm. Not to mention, crippling alcoholism, bad drug addiction. Yeah, I mean, I saw I don't know whether you may have seen the same thing.
$70,000 in debt.
Yeah, like, basically life collapsed. Everything just...
Yeah.
And
he has a lot of car crashes in his Wikipedia profile. More than any one person should have. Unless they're all like kind of like, what's the threshold for being listed as a car crash in Wikipedia? If he just like bumps into someone in the parking lot, the car park, does that count?
Like a fender bender?
Yeah, a little bit of a fender bender that scuffs the paint.
Mm. Probably not. Probably not.
Probably not. What if he's drunk and he gets out and assaults them?
Probably.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's less about the car crash than it is about. But he didn't do that. He was
being a belligerent drunk well into the 2000s.
Yeah, it really didn't end up well for him.
No.
Bit of a sad story, really.
Amputated his leg under the... Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Man, Jan Michael Vincent. What happened? What happened to the Jan Michael Vincent I used to know, playing cello in the lake, you know?
Yeah. Serenading eagles.
This was his last, like, basically, Airwolf was his last big thing. Like, after that, if you go look through his IMDb, it's pretty lean.
Pretty scant.
It's pretty lean after 86. But a very, very sad story. I mean, I think he's one of the guys that sort of fell victim to, everyone was doing coke.
Ironic that Stringfellow could say no, but
Jan Michael
Vincent would have been gobbling it up.
Allegedly, we should say.
Yeah, allegedly.
For legal purposes.
Even though he's been charged with cocaine possession multiple times. We should say allegedly.
Literally gobbling.
Been in a lot of car accidents, which I feel is somewhat... At least a couple have to be connected to the cocaine.
Yeah, you know you've...
Quite possibly.
You know you've really made it when you're sticking a hunting knife into a bag of cocaine.
So that's the dream.
You know, that's the dream. That's when you know.
Do you think that every time we do an episode and you collect... You collect 200K?
Yeah. Every time we cut open to a bag of cocaine with a hunting knife,
Scott.
I think I've made it.
Yeah. We do this pro bono. You're the one.
I dangle it out in front of your faces.
Yeah.
We can't afford cocaine.
Yeah.
You'll never get this.
Can we talk about the sort of like illegitimate son situation?
Yeah.
So...
Half pint.
Stringfellow's brother, who in the first episode he sort of like makes a deal.
So
with
that's obviously
agencies.
The one of the overarching storylines is him looking for his brother.
Yeah, who went missing in Vietnam.
We'll get to
serving.
This later, but obviously Belisario's got this weird.
He's got a thing with Vietnam.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
Of course.
Go.
And so his brother, who we don't see in the last episode, so presumably they didn't find him, but he has a child that they think is his son, or like some sort of like Vietnamese family,
yeah,
illegitimate Vietnamese family, which we've talked about before on the podcast.
Mm.
So it's good to see it finally come to fruition.
Mm. In relation to Belisario's shows as well.
Mm.
I think JAG was the first one to kind of...
Actually. This young kid, Lee, very enthusiastic about being involved with all of the exploits of Stringfellow.
I want to help you look for them. I'm not afraid of them.
Which is so dangerous.
Mm.
At one point, they like walk into a club to confront Kincaid. And like walk in wearing like almost identical outfits.
Mm.
Like
they look like they're both Stringfellow out of Miami
and,
Vice.
And this like 9-year-old kid who's like dressed in like, you know, like pants and a suit jacket with like glasses. He would look less conspicuous.
Risky business Ray-Bans.
He would look less conspicuous if you just dress him up
regular
as
a kid.
Just as a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's not fooling anyone. That's...
And he's got a money clip like full of 20s and he pays for their drinks.
Yeah. He goes like goes up and talks to random women.
It's
like,
it's a terrible... That plan there
maybe
terrible.
They're just preying on the sort of sheltered sensibilities of 80s Americans and they're like, oh, my mate, I've never seen a Vietnamese man before. Maybe that's what they look like.
Looks like a 9-year-old boy.
Yeah.
They are known for being shorter
they
than...
They are being short.
So, shorter than the Americans. So... That whole scene really annoyed me. It's like, oh, we're gonna go undercover and do this.
Just
like,
go by yourself.
Exactly. Don't endanger the nine. Don't bring the 9-year-old kid.
Don't take the
to the guy who's trafficking women. Like,
no,
this is not a good plan. Take him to a club as well. Why would the club even let them in?
And at the end of the episode, he's like, if they ever find your father or whatever, like, you know, but whatever, like I'll adopt you. Like you can be my son. You have no claim to adopt this child. Like endangered him seriously.
Exactly.
Both this kid needs proper parents.
Both the clubs that he goes to in this episode are incredibly well lit.
Incredibly well
lit.
Which
leads me to believe they're not actually clubs. It's more of like a blue light disco vibe than a club. They're so well lit, it's insane.
Mm.
And there's even one point where one of like these sort of periphery characters mentions that it's no one would come to a seedy place like this. I'm like, seedy? What? It's like the most wholesome club I've ever seen.
Yeah, I can see everybody's faces.
Belisario himself has clearly never been to a club and refused to hear anyone else's opinion on what a club would look like.
There is,
I don't know what the
kids
are
fully
into.
Lit. They've got pink railing.
Yeah, you want to be able to see the cocaine that you're doing.
Everybody's wearing exactly. Faded salmon.
I do want to point out, though.
A lot of faded salmon.
That episode and the first one, he's pretty... Belisario, and even the show, is pretty ruthless with the way it kills people. Kincaid literally took a half pint's auntie and just flew out to sea and then pushed her out the...
Yeah,
out
brutal.
The helicopter. But then also...
Gabrielle
just tortured her to death.
Yes.
Yeah, in the sun. It's a... For an 80s show.
Yeah.
Really, like, they...
And it's all like women.
All women, yeah.
Yeah, it's weird that, like...
I don't know, Belisario. I feel like if you were in a psychiatrist... sitting on the psychiatrist's chase, there'd be a lot coming out there.
There are some issues.
Yeah, I feel like there's some sort of deep-seated parental issues.
Yeah.
Twisted relationships with women.
I do wonder how...
Odd relationships with his father. Something happened in Vietnam
definitely
that he hasn't ever gotten over.
Definitely something happened in Vietnam. There must be something there.
I reckon at some point he was rejected from the military.
Belisario.
Yeah. Because the weird obsession... I reckon he's...
But he knows a lot about it.
I reckon his father was a military man who went to Vietnam, maybe died over there, and then he wanted to sign up, be like dad. And got rejected.
And
or
so
maybe his dad was in Korea or something. I don't know.
A bit of Lieutenant Dan vibe about
it. He dwells on it way too much.
Yeah.
Very weird. Weird, weird relationship. Mm.
In my head, I always try and recast shows, like the ones we do. They just don't really make actors like Jan Michael Vincent anymore.
A really sort of wooden scruff. It's like he's always got a bit of a scowl on his face.
Yeah.
Emotionless.
And he's not... Like, the thing is, he's actually not... He's not a great actor.
Mm. No.
Jan Michaels.
No.
What you would call... What those in the business call a bad actor.
I believe that is the technical name, yes.
You weren't moved by his scene on the pier, shedding a tear...
While serenading the eagle?
Serenading the eagle.
Oh, man,
that sounds like
a
euphemism.
Good scene. But if
we've all serenaded the eagle from time to time
on the pier.
I don't want to.
Morgan got arrested the first time.
I don't want to put the.
Well, the second time.
You don't want to know.
Dropped a woman into the middle of the ocean.
Yep.
Yeah.
Bowie knifing a bag of cocaine.
Yeah, we've all done it once.
Well, we're so close to rebooting this anyway.
So let's just dive into reboots.
Shall we move to it?
Yeah, let's do it. Who's going first? Should I take the lead? Do we take the lead?
I'll take the lead. Yeah, go for it.
So my reboot. It's simple, yet
elegant,
complex.
Okay.
So mine is. I've lifted, as I like to do, because I don't come up with my own ideas. I always lift something from someone else.
Jeremy?
Well, generally Jeremy or Bill Simmons or someone like that. Another podcast. But this one here I've actually lifted from just another movie. So John Cusack finds a portal. Sound familiar enough?
John Cusack finds a portal?
Yeah, a portal. Being John Malkovich.
Oh, okay, right. Yep.
But he finds a portal rather than finding a portal to the mind. It's not actually John Cusack. So John Cusack is playing a character in the 1960s.
Okay.
And he finds a portal, like you say, he works, like he's in the military, and he finds a portal within sort of a military base. He's playing some character. It's John Cusack though, and it's a portal into the mind of a young woman who happens to be a singer. That singer is Cher. So basically, he finds this, reports it to his CO, who then the CO goes in there, and he's like, "Oh my god, I'm in Cher's body, like in Cher's mind. I can see what Cher's doing." And then they report
where is
that.
This going?
They report that on, and then basically, the US government realize that so the military's found accidentally that they can control Cher. So what this show is, it's sort of like a semi real documentary / drama about how the US government have. Use Cher's influence over the 70s, 80s, 90s, and to a lesser extent, the early 2000s. Do you believe in love after love? And how they've used that to influence world events through Cher. It's called Cher Wolf. and it's basically the weaponization of Cher and her music and influence. Stars John Cusack.
John Cusack as Cher.
As Cher. Yeah, he plays Cher Wolf. John Cusack plays everyone.
How did you get to this?
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
I've got a theory.
Yeah, what?
I think you started with Airwolf and worked backwards from that.
Yeah, pretty much, more or less.
Chairwolf? No, it won't work.
I did not go Chairwolf.
Darewolf, Marewolf.
No. I literally picked that Cher for some reason. I don't know why.
Show about like Claire Danes or something. Clairewolf?
And then it got to...
Clairewolf.
Sherewolf.
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 Hairwolf.
Do you believe in love after love?
Do you believe in love after love? Is that huge where she's on the Navy ship?
No, that's or a is different that, song.
What song is that? Where she's like straddling the cannon?
Yeah.
Is that Cher or Madonna?
No, it's Cher.
It's what's the other one? Turn Back Time? No.
Yeah, Turn Back
Is it Turn
Time.
Back Time? Is that the one? Because that seems weird.
And
now.
all the Navy
There's like all the Navy men who are just like
infatuated with her.
Yeah, just like frothing at the mouth.
Exactly. Well, you know, she's controlled the military for years.
Prophetic.
It's like Secretary of Defense, basically.
Mm-hmm. More or less. It's because the government's been controlling it.
Secretary of
It's almost as good as Sherewolf.
Yeah, if I could turn back time. Yeah.
Sherewolf.
Ah.
Sherewolf.
I like it.
So get around it.
You've got Cher playing Cher, obviously.
Cher will play Cher, yeah.
Like 70-year-old Cher playing 30-year-old Cher.
Well, she's got she gets some more work done.
Yeah, okay. She hasn't had enough done.
Can always get more work done.
That's what I've heard in Hollywood.
It's not going to be a big ask.
It's really not. I mean,
if you pay for it.
I mean, when she said, "If only I could turn back time," she can turn back time. She has the money. She's got the connections.
Oh wow, she is 72.
She's literally 72. I bet you she doesn't look like it. She'll look like some sort of alien now. She's had a lot of work done.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Scott.
Sherewolf.
Sherewolf.
Can you top Sherewolf? I feel like you can, because Sherewolf is not great.
Okay.
I don't have one today, Scott, so
you don't have one?
No pressure. But this is the only chance we've got to top Sherewolf. So
right. Hey,
don't let Sherewolf be there.
So Sherewolf is a perfectly legitimate reboot.
I like Sherewolf.
Yeah. Thank you, Scott.
It's a bit strange, but I'm willing to go with it.
I'll admit that. Come down to my cabin. You play by my rules. Sure.
All right. Home ground advantage. Here we go. Okay. So I'm essentially going to go for an interview-based show with Jan Michael Vincent nowadays. And I want you to think... I wasn't sure if it was going to be Jan Michael Vincent or if maybe just we get Donald P. Belisario.
Yep.
But the show is a cross between comedians in cars getting coffee. And have you guys ever seen the show Getting Doug with High?
Yes.
Essentially where a comedian, Doug, I can't remember his surname.
Yeah, something. I don't remember, but he gets high with guests,
yeah,
right?
He gets people on the show.
Doug Stanhope?
No, okay. It's not Doug Stanhope. But yeah, he gets people on the show, they like rip a couple of bongs and then they just have a chat.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, it's that I think we get Jan Michael Vincent in, he gets in his, favourite celebrities.
Doug Benson,
that's it. He gets his favourite celebrities in, maybe people that he's acted with, and they jump in a helicopter, they get up in the air, they start flying, they rip out the bag of coke, chuck the hunting knife through it.
I was about to say, if they're doing this, they just blast.
They
got to
be blasted. Take a couple of bumps, and then they just start just talking about whatever the hell they want to talk about.
Really quickly.
I would really watch that.
You would?
Yeah, I'm just picturing Jan Michael Vincent in a helicopter with like Ted dancing, and they're just belting lines of coke off of a Bowie knife.
Who's flying the helicopter?
Jan Michael Vincent is flying the helicopter, 100%.
Whilst doing... lines is the wrong word. While he's shoveling chunks. Cocaine into his nose with a Bowie knife.
Chunks of coke. So essentially, I think get ready to green light everybody's new favourite show, Coke Pilots. Jan Michael Vincent just gets blasted on coke with
celebrity of the week,
whoever he wants.
Yeah. So first episode would be with the now late Ernest Borgnine.
Yep.
What,
that's
the corpse of Ernest Borgnine. I'd be bad watching.
it's the ghost of Ernest Borgnine.
Yeah, okay. Really sets the scene for the rest of the series. But I imagine, released on YouTube, just real simple.
I'd watch the shit out of that.
It'd be great. Can you imagine those? And I think you've also got a camera outside of the helicopter, just getting the moves, because there's going to be some crazy shit going on.
I'd be particularly excited to watch the episode where Jan Michael Vincent takes Justin Roiland and Dan Harmon on a flight.
Yeah.
And they just get jacked on coke and just talk about Jan Michael Vincent.
Jan Michael Vincent.
You talk about Jan Michael Vincent with Jan Michael Vincent.
Mm. Maybe this is the origin story of how that sketch happened in Rick and Morty. Maybe that's why this is.
That Justin Roiland and Dan Harmon went on a helicopter ride with Jan Michael Vincent, just Adam just snorting lines like maniacs.
Mm. And then they got talking about this whole Jan Michael Vincent quadrant situation.
So who said it doesn't snow inside of a helicopter?
So I guess that brings us to List of the Week, which
the late, great Aaron Boughton.
Late, great Aaron Boughton.
Mm.
Beyond the Grave has provided us with a list.
Yeah, surprise, surprise.
Beyond the Grave is,
we don't get the same sort of access to the IMDb lists that Aaron gets.
No. We don't have that kind of clearance.
No.
But he has, he has graces with his...
He has handed the keys to me, so to speak, this week at least.
You got the keys this week.
And he has granted me permission to commandeer the segment.
May I ask, when he came to you, did he come to you
in a dream, in a vision?
Flying in through a window and...
Yeah.
It was all that peyote you drank.
I'm not sure. They both happened at the same time, but it's hard to say whether or not the peyote caused the vision.
Yeah,
or
You gotta, you probably shouldn't drink peyote every night.
Well, it helps me get to sleep.
That is I'm not gonna what sit peyote here. Does.
I'm not going to sit here and defend my pre-bed ritual with you. I don't need to do that, all right?
You should. I mean, it seems a little
it's
excessive.
Perfectly natural, perfectly healthy.
Well, to drink 400 mils of peyote every night.
Well, I'm sorry that I've only got a 400 mil measuring cup and I have no other way to measure it out.
Just vomit
that's
like a
my fault, Scott.
And just in the morning, you're vomiting like a maniac.
Ah, for sure. Yeah, mostly through the night.
It's got to get out.
My lovely partner has to roll me over to my side, put me in the recovery position so I don't chuck my own vomit, but...
Most people put the bins out in their bed routine.
It works. Really?
Yeah.
Every night you put the bins out.
Does your bin guy not come every night?
No.
Oh, that's strange.
Oh, there you go.
Must live in different areas.
Your council rates must be through the roof.
Very high.
Paying a lot. Please, go on.
Anyway.
Bring us the list.
So, courtesy of Aaron. Thank you, Aaron. I don't know what thank you is in Swedish. Probably something like... Actually, let me look it up.
I don't think that's necessary. No, no, I think you maybe just do the list. And I reckon we'll just do the list.
You've gone too far.
No.
Okay.
It's TAC.
Are you sure you're pronouncing that right?
TAC.
Okay, good.
Duck,
better,
Aaron.
Better.
Duck,
better.
Duck, duck. Duck, duck. It is Celebrities I've Met by Swiss Angel 4616.
We've done Celebrities I've Met before. No, this is a new one. A new user. We've done Celebrities I've Met.
There was Celebrities I've Met, but then it turns out that they just dreamt of all.
I think this is a different one.
Okay.
The list is ordered in number, like their favorite celebrities at the top. I'm scrolling through here, and I haven't the first 10 I've never heard of, 11, 12. 14 we get to DVD, but its link to Airwolf is Jan Michael Vincent.
Oh.
Number 274 on the list. As I just said, the list is sort of descending order in their sort of their favorite celebrities.
I understand, but can you actually, I mean, you may not know number one, but Scott and I and the listeners might know number one.
So number one on the list
Their favorite.
Joan Collins. Yes.
Yeah. She's like she's an actress from the 19 somethings. I've heard of
the 1900s.
And then Larry Hagman.
Okay, no,
was from Dallas.
Yep.
And then Stephanie Powers. And then Nicholas Lee from Vertical Limit.
Wait, Lee spelt
L-E-A.
L-E-A, yeah. He was in Alex Krycek in The X-Files.
Should he have been someone's fourth favorite celebrity, though?
It's very high.
How many people are on this list?
Well, there's at least 300.
Wow. So this is people that they've met? Is that right?
Apparently.
This person just works in Hollywood.
They have to.
A list of celebrities I've met. The first 10 are my most favorite. To make a choice is really difficult.
Nicholas Lee.
The most meeting had been amazing choices. And fun. The most of those I met on conventions, with a capital C. Smaller and bigger events, premiere or concert, etc. This person has poor English, so I feel like this is fabricated. Jan Michael Vincent, nice guy, but I'm not accommodating for the poor English. Nice guy, but due his illness, he looks old and is now in a wheelchair. Anyway, it was great to meet him, and he had fun too. So this person, Swiss Angel 4616, described 167 of them as nice, and the rest got charming or lovely. These are Aaron's sort of
cliff notes.
Cliff notes, yeah. Mm. They were very surprised to find that many actors who play bad guys or assholes are actually nice in person. Weird, right?
Yeah, I know. Who would have thought?
How weird! Yeah. Surely you would cast an asshole as the villain.
Oh, it makes sense. Like they don't really have to sort of act; they just do. Yeah.
It'd be more convincing. Yeah.
Most of the entries are about actors talking with them about specific work. For example, Mads Mikkelsen.
He's the guy from Hannibal.
Yeah. One more in Bond Meet List I have now. A Bond villain. He's nice, and he was surprised when I told him that I'm an extra in the opera scene of Casino Royale. In the audience, but can't be seen. Anyway,
we've all got Bond lists.
Yeah. Hey, well, you don't remember when I was that extra in that scene where there was 3,000 people in the crowd? Come on, man. I thought we were friends. That's classic Mads Mikkelsen, though. He's a real asshole.
Yeah.
He doesn't care about the little guy.
He's obviously blanked him. Blanked Swiss Angel.
So, Dick Van Dyke.
DVD.
Yeah. Oh, Dick. He was number 14 on the list.
14?
One word. Supercalifragilistic.
Oh.
Arguably easy. Not a word.
Cheap shot. Cheap shot.
I'm being honest, I'm reading it off my Google Doc here, and it's got a little red squiggly line, so Google doesn't consider it a word.
Did you say BVD as well?
DVD.
Or just DVD?
It was amazing to meet him. While he made a pause of signing autographs, he did signing songs from his movies like Mary Poppins. That was pure magic to see it live. Number 28, also a Belisario favorite.
David James?
David James.
No. Close.
Belisario.
Scott Bakula?
Oh, Scott Bakula.
Bakula.
Oh, Bakula, yeah.
One of the most nicest Star Trek actor I've met. Very charming.
What?
One of the most nicest.
Star Trek
Is actor. He Star, is he in
yeah,
Star Trek?
Yeah, he was in...
Does he leap in for a crossover episode?
Well, obviously. But no, he was in Enterprise, which was the one...
That's the newer issue, right?
It was in like the mid-2000s, I think.
Number 69. Patrick Stewart.
Oh,
kind of TIS fame.
Mm. What's the description?
Nice guy. Was very happy when I recognized his work in Jeffrey and Little Lord Fauntleroy?
Fauntleroy? I've not heard
Little
of
Lord
of those
Fauntleroy
things.
And Excalibur.
Oh, I remember Excalibur.
Yeah, I mean. Hmm. He was very happy that I not only know Star Trek and X-Men, he did so many things more. His voice is amazing. He did do so many things more.
He did do so many things more. So people forget about that.
I'm very glad that Swiss Angel 4616 drew, you know, the wider IMDb's audience attention to his back catalogue.
Wow. So this is somebody...
Patrick Stewart, look him up. Kind of a good actor.
Mm. Did they write that?
No, but mine.
That's your personal editorial. Your personal flavor.
Yeah, and it's one more on the list.
Mm.
63, also of TIS fame.
Mm.
The Hoff.
Oh.
No comments, but it's there.
No comment. We've had a couple of real bad grammar lists.
Yeah,
recently.
It's almost like the people that write lists on IMDb aren't the sort of, you know, cream of the intellectual crop.
what are you saying?
Whoa,
Jez.
Let's just because they've got the time to drop in 300 people that they've met.
Let's not cultivate bad press here.
You're right. No, I'm sorry. They give us a wealth of podcast segment material. So that's it.
Yeah.
That's the list.
That's a good list.
I like it.
Hopefully I mean, the segment justice.
At least they've actually met the people on this list.
Yeah.
Unlike the last one, which was like people that actors that I've met.
In my dream.
And they were just in the dreams.
And there was one person they said they'd met, but they weren't sure if it was a dream or not. Like, it was very very vague. So, which makes me think it was
that me? And was it during one of my pre-bedtime peyote trips?
Probably. I don't know.
It was probably me.
I'm still sort of hung up on your description of the list we get. Not the cream of the...
intellectual crop.
That's the most insulting description I've ever heard in my life.
Technically, they're doing a service to the community, and they exist. And that's, I mean...
What community?
One
our community.
You can say about them is that they exist.
Yeah, they are servicing us. That's true. Let's not lie about that. Yeah.
Okay, well,
don't bite the hand that feeds.
This is true. Airwolf. This was really worth our time.
Yeah.
This was so woo-woo! Worth our time.
I do.
Was that a good wolf noise? I don't know.
Yeah. I think. Are you going for the
That's what I was going for.
Are you trying to do the earwolf thing?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Earwolf. We're not affiliated with Earwolf, just for the record.
Or Wolf Collar?
Well, maybe we're affiliated with Wolf Collar.
Could be.
Yeah. But this was so worth our time.
The first episode, especially.
I wasn't huge in the second. I could definitely... The second one, I sort of was drifting in and out.
There's a common theme amongst the shows that we watch is that...
The first is good and the second's generally...
Usually there's a reason the show is wound up and it's because it starts to suck.
Well, not too... Yeah, I mean, this wasn't too dissimilar to MacGyver, how that last episode... But this last episode of MacGyver was bad, but it wasn't... I think the last episode of MacGyver was better than this last episode.
Yeah...
Possibly because it's newer. So
I don't think
94.
So. I think the Airwolf last episode was better.
I don't think so. I thought the Airwolf last episode was garbage.
Well, you're a garbage human.
Oh, well, I mean, that would explain it.
Yeah.
Come into my house.
I wonder if this would suffer from the Baywatch Nights syndrome, where episode one... the one that we watched, the pilot, is really good. And then the second is just...
Let's not bandy around really good and Baywatch Nights.
No, but
you didn't.
First episode of Baywatch Nights was incredible.
Have you gone back and actually watched like two and three? Because Jeremy and I have.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, like, does it fall off a cliff? Like, that's what I'm saying. Is it just this first episode because they put so much effort into it?
Second episode of Baywatch Nights centers around a whole bunch of roller skating bandits. So,
oh, great.
You tell me.
To be fair, though, that
seems like it's trending upwards, Scott.
The leader of the skating bandits is Jay Peterman from Seinfeld.
Yeah. Okay, great,
so
great.
It gets better.
Yeah, somehow. I don't know. It's very strange.
We're just poking holes all through your theory here, Scott.
Evidently.
Yeah, fair enough.
But no, I don't know whether I'll go back and watch more of this. I kind of want to, but I just feel like that first episode might have just been lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. I think if you've got an interest in this show, listener...
Just watch the first one.
Maybe if we're being ambitious listeners...
Well, Aaron's definitely listening.
Exactly.
It's at least one.
the first episode is worth a watch because it's it's as good as a any other, I would say, like sort of B grade 80s.
I would say better.
I would say better. I would say better. This was, like I said, it was genuinely pretty good.
Genuine A minus 80s action drama.
All right. So general consensus is maybe don't watch all of Airwolf. No, but first episode.
Watch the first one. Give it a crack. First one. Do it.
Can be viewed as a self-contained.
Yeah.
Give it a crack.
I would like it to rename it to Airwolf, Lightning in a Bottle, semicolon, Lightning in a Bottle, for that first episode. Just watch that on its own and you've got yourself an evening right there. Because, that first episode, like, genuinely well acted, good story, pretty...
Yeah, you get your Airwolf episode one, you get your snifter of brandy, you get your Bowie knife of coke, you got yourself an evening.
You've got yourself an evening.
You get your 400 mils of peyote.
Exactly.
Is it a snifter? Swifter?
No, the peyote's to come down.
How do you measure brandy? Snifter?
So many people use peyote to come down.
But no, I personally don't plan on watching any more Airwolf. I was really, really, really happy with that first episode. And I could actually see myself watching that again at some stage in my lifetime.
Have a good repeat viewing. Mm.
Possibly whilst...
possibly
ups
while
the eyeballs
high.
On peyote.
On peyote, Obviously. Shout out to Jan Michael Vincent, who's struggling with ill health now.
If you're listening, we're thinking of you.
Exactly. Mm. And we respect your work in Airwolf.
Yeah. It's a lot of car crashes for one Wikipedia page.
It's a lot.
Maybe you don't
it's
get behind lot. The wheel anymore, Jan.
No,
you're making enough money. Let someone else drive.
I don't think Jan's getting behind there.
Yeah, Jan, I don't think that's happening. Behind there.
And you just sit in the back seat and fire the Bowie knife up and go to town.
I don't think you should do that either. You clearly haven't seen the footage that Scott and I have.
He's going out in a hell of gunfire.
Okay. Well, anyway, Scott, where can people find us on the interwebs?
You can head to theincompleteseries.com. You can find all of our other episodes there, as well as, submit a suggestion to us.
We do like a suggestion. We love finding new content.
Maybe even some of those suggestions could be for TV shows, but feel free to suggest anything else.
If you think Jez has probably gone a bit too hard on the peyote, feel free to say so.
Maybe you don't like Morgan's hairstyle. Maybe you can suggest him another one.
Exactly. Both are big problems, I think.
Exactly. Maybe suggest him a new drug that Jeremy can have before bed.
Open to suggestions.
Like a sleeping pill, maybe.
Crystal meth is pretty popular these days, Jess.
I hear it's great for
going to sleep. How important is teeth retention to you?
I feel like I run my sort of tongue through my around my mouth, and I feel like I got too many.
Yeah.
Well, crystal meth may be for you.
Yeah. How would you like to go to bed 38 hours from now? Does that sound good?
I mean, I was planning on sleeping maybe two or three times between then and now, but... I could wait.
Just
could
skip
wait.
It. I think just put a pin in that.
And fit a lot of weekend in that time.
Jez, where can people find us on social media?
The Incomplete Series on Facebook.
That's it.
Not .com. Don't need the .com when it's on Facebook. No, and at Podcast TIS on Instagram.
And at The Incomplete Series on Instagram.
Podcast TIS is on Twitter.
But let's maybe just wrap things up there. And watch the first episode of Werewolf.
Airwolf in London.
All right, well, let's leave it there. So thank you, Jez.
Thank you.
And thank you, Scott.
Thank you, Morgan.